Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews about and sounds of Chicago government. I'm Dave Gloetz. In this episode, we'll listen to members of the City Council speak to and question each other at the May meeting of the Council, and we'll hear a remarkable speech by Mayor Lori Lightfoot at the Council meeting reflecting on the one-year anniversary of her inauguration. All this we'll hear in the context of an interview with me by the host of The Ben Jarofsky Show. Here's the episode.
Dave Gloetz is his name. Biking and following the city council is his game. Welcome back to the show, young man.
It's great to be back. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Dave Gloetz takes the deep dive with the Chicago City Council, my beloved Chicago City Council. By the way, young Dave Gloetz has a city council story in last week's Reader. Tell folks about it, Dave.
That story was a follow-up to the one that I did a little while back that took a look at reactions to the mayor giving herself a bunch of emergency powers back in March around the pandemic. After that article appeared in the Reader, the mayor decided to try to codify, in fact, she successfully codified her emergency powers executive order. And the follow-up article, which is called Alderman Power Through Lightfoot's Emergency Moves, which appears at chicagoreader.com, looked at aldermanic reactions to her trying to get that passed through city council.
One of the conclusions is that if you are the chair of a committee, there's a greater likelihood that you'll be waving the Mayor Lori Lightfoot flag. And if you're not a chair of a committee, there's a greater likelihood that you might be willing to speak out against the mayor's initiatives or vote against her programs. Would you say that was an accurate conclusion to make based on your reporting?
Ben, I infer that you're talking about a quid pro quo here.
Well, you know, this is one of my favorite themes before we take the deep dive. In the city of Chicago, we have two branches of government. We have an executive, represented by the mayor, and we have a legislative, represented by the city council. But in the city of Chicago, they've decided to do away with the checks and the balances part of this equation, and instead, they allow the mayor to essentially name who the chairs of the various important council committees are. Why do we do that in the city of Chicago? This is my theory. I'm not saying that Dave Gloetz subscribes to it. It's because people in the city of Chicago love strong mayors, unless it's Howard Washington. Then only half the people in the city like strong mayors. They love strong mayors that boss them around and tell them what to do, because that's how we are in the city of Chicago. Anyway, that's my theory, Dave.
Well, in connection with what you just said, another fun fact is that the mayor chairs the city council meetings and has for as long as I can remember. So that's a sort of an interesting blend of executive and legislative powers.
Yes, that's true. I hadn't even thought of that. The mayor, and she wields that mighty gavel. Well, back in the day when the city council. In the virtual city council, does she have a gavel as well?
Yes, she actually does have a gavel. But what's even more fun is that she has this huge, and we know this because newspaper photographers are allowed in her office when she's conducting the meetings via video conference. She has this ginormous video screen in front of her on which she can see all 50 of the aldermen who are on Zoom with her. Yeah, it's even more awesome than the gavel, I think,
oh,
that she's
God.
Got.
Them. I tell you, folks, you can't exaggerate this point too much. Chicagoans love a tough, bossy mayor. They just love it like they love it when the Chicago Bulls win the championship. All right, take us through some of the highlights of the last city council meeting. Always a favorite part of the Ben Jarofsky Show.
Well, that one was on May 20th, and it went on for about 3 hours, and I have some audio from that meeting, plus a little bit from another meeting that took place on May 18th, 2 days earlier, of the Committee on Finance. Now, Ben, I don't know if this was on purpose or it just so happened that the May 20th meeting was on the one-year anniversary of the inauguration of Mayor Lightfoot and of a handful of new aldermen. And I know you've had a couple of the freshman aldermen on recently, haven't you?
Yes. I'm trying to think the last rookie alderman I had on. I've had so many. Matt Martin's been on. Danny Lospato.
You had Alderwoman Jeanette Taylor on recently, if I'm not mistaken.
JT.
That's correct.
A regular on this show, yes. Jeanette Taylor, the pride and joy of the 20th Ward in Woodlawn on the South Side. She was the most recent one, but I think Daniel Lospato was on right before her. I think he's your alderman, isn't he?
No, he's next door to me. I'm actually in the ward of the chair of the Finance Committee, Scott Wagesbag.
So the streets are paved really well now? That was one of my...
Let's not get into that.
All right, just really fast, got to say this. I did a whole column about this. It's one of my favorite topics. And Dave and I talked about this in the previous podcast we had where he was the host and I was the guest. I had a conversation with a constituent of Scotty Wagesbag, 32nd Ward Alderman, who said even though he appreciated Scott's independence in the face of Mayor Rahm, he realized he paid a price for it. Because he was an independent alderman, the streets weren't paved. I go, what makes you say that? He goes, well, there's potholes. And I'm like, well, obviously, you've never been around the city of Chicago. There's nothing but potholes everywhere you go. It's not because your alderman is independent of Mayor Rahm. It's because Mayor Rahm's incapable of filling potholes. Anyway.
And welcome to another episode of Mythbusters here at the Ben Jarofsky Show. Ben, speaking of Scott Wags, the Finance Committee chairman, let's talk about the Finance Committee meeting that took place on May 18th. There's something that I thought was really interesting in this meeting. The city council, 2 days later, approved tax increment financing for 5 Chicago parks. It's mostly like field houses, and I think there was one turf field. This kind of came up at the Finance Committee meeting 2 days earlier, where it was explained that the city is doing what's called an intergovernmental agreement between it and the Park District. First of all, why do we need an intergovernmental agreement? The Park District is a separate governmental entity. So if the city is going to use some of its own financing to pay for, say, field houses, it's actually transferring that money to a different governmental entity. Now, Ben, help me on the setup here. Why, to you, is it notable that the city is using tax increment financing to pay for parks?
Wow. What a loaded question, man. That's called a softball to me.
Well, we're talking about parks, so softball, it works, yeah.
Yes. Okay. A TIF is essentially a surcharge that is applied to your property taxes, and it goes into a fund controlled by the mayor. It's called a slush fund by me and anybody who takes the time to study it, because the mayor is free to spend it pretty much any way he or she wants. So in this case, the mayor is going to spend it on field houses, you say, for the parks. The way the TIF program literally works is that you effectively have to pay more property taxes to the parks to compensate for the amount of property taxes that the parks are essentially allowing to be diverted into the mayor's slush fund. It's really the case with the schools, because they give more than anybody else. The schools will give the mayor a dollar worth of property taxes, and the city will spend 50 cents on building a school, at which point all the appointees that the mayor has running the school system, all the people that the mayor appointed to the school system, fall to their knees and say, thank you, Mr. Mayor, for giving back half the money we gave to you in the first place. It's very similar with the Park District, Dave, because they too are run by mayoral appointees, even though they are, as you pointed out, a separate taxing body. So we go through this contrivance where you have lawyers from both sides, you know, negotiating a deal, the terms of which the mayor has already told them. These are the deal. Got it, boss. We'll now work it out.
Just a detail there, you're talking about that there are property taxes being paid into a tax increment financing district, and people in that district don't realize that money that they thought might have been paid towards the park district was actually being diverted and going into a tax increment financing district. That's where the 50 cents versus a dollar comes in. Let's go to the hearing. First thing we're going to hear is a guy from the planning department describe the very first of these park district projects, and let's listen to that.
My name is Nelson Chung with the Department of Plan and Development. We're here to testify on the next 4 items, authorizing Department of Plan and Development enter into intergovernmental agreements with the park district for park improvements. The first one is the proposed ordinance authorizing the Department of Planning to enter into an intergovernmental agreement to provide $3 million from the Belmont Central TIF to the Chicago Park District for improvements to Black Hawk Park. The TIF funds will be used for field house renovations which include roof and gutter replacement, masonry tuck pointing, window and door replacement, as well as ADA access improvements. The project is located in the 36th Ward, hence the support of Alderman Villegas. Notices were sent also to Alderman Reboyes, Cardona, and Sposado, who also share this TIF district.
Alderman Villegas, would you like to comment on this?
I think one of our colleagues made a comment regarding the process for TIF. And so moving forward, I would like to make sure that prior to these intergovernmental agreements being approved, that the aldermen that encompass a TIF are brought in.
Now, what's interesting to me here is that although the guy from the planning department, you notice, said that aldermen whose wards are intersecting these TIF districts got letters from the city, Alderman Gilbert Villegas of the 36th Ward then urges that all aldermen who do have intersecting jurisdictions are, quote, brought in, unquote. I should also note that Villegas is Mayor Lightfoot's floor leader in the council and chair of the Economic Development Committee. For some reason, even though the city sent letters to all these aldermen, Villegas feels the need to say, somehow these aldermen are not being brought in. And I thought, why did he even say that? Well, a year ago, almost to the day of the city council meeting, Mayor Lightfoot got the planning department and other departments to make this big change from things that required aldermanic notification, like perhaps an intergovernmental agreement for a TIF district, to just notifying the aldermen. And what I think might be happening here is some aldermen might still be used to this kind of stuff, not proceeding without their okay, but instead they're getting like a memo or an email, and they get so many memos and emails, particularly from the Lightfoot administration, according to an alderman I spoke with, that they might not even notice that it came across their desk. So until it actually gets into a committee, then they see, oh, there's $3 million coming from a local TIF district going to a park. I didn't know about that.
There's a lot to unpack here. A lot of this has to do with the utter ignorance that the people of the city of Chicago have about how TIF works. And in defense of the people of the city of Chicago, here I am defending the people of the city of Chicago. Let's just note that they're ignorant because their city has put out so misinformation on this program that people either believe the wrong thing or just throw up their hands and say, we don't get it. So bottom line is this: first point, all people in the city of Chicago contribute to that particular TIF that Gilbert Villegas was alluding to. I think you said Belmont Cragen TIF.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's a TIF district that services the Belmont Cragen area in the northwest side of Chicago. But folks, every single person in the city of Chicago contributes to it, just like every single person in the city of Chicago contributes property taxes to the Lincoln Yards TIF. One of the main reasons they're successful about it, because people in the city of Chicago don't realize that every time you create a TIF district, you limit the taxing body's ability to collect property taxes from the property in that TIF district. And so as a result, they have to raise the rates citywide. I keep saying this over and over again. People look at me like I'm some demented drunk in a park. Oh, there he goes again. But it's a reality. So I don't know why Gilbert Villegas would have any more say than Anthony Beal, just first alderman I thought of, or your favorite alderman, Raymond Lopez of the 15th Ward, or Michelle Smith in the 43rd Ward. Everybody's contributing to it. Right there and then, the notion that somehow or other, Gilbert Villegas would have more say than any other alderman contributes to the distorted view that people have of this program. And it's one of the main reasons that Brian Hopkins can get, what is it, $1.3 billion for his TIF project, Lincoln Yards, and Gilbert Villegas is satisfied with, what was it, $3 million?
$3 million, yeah.
Yeah. Then there's the matter, the secondary matter, of the fact that the park itself is in Gilbert Villegas's ward. So he's sort of like getting the money because the park's in his ward. But the TIF district itself goes through three or four wards. And that's because TIF districts don't correspond directly to any one ward. Particularly since a TIF district exists for 23 years, ward boundaries change every 10 years through remapping. So that's why you shouldn't even think of it as Gilbert Villegas' little piggy bank in the first place. But if you buy into the piggy bank theory, it could be that a greater portion of this TIF district is in somebody else's ward. It just happens that this project is in Gilbert Villegas' ward.
Well, as I said earlier, there is a certain amount of adjustment that is still going on among aldermen, I think, about what exactly can go on with and without their approval. I don't disagree with anything you just said, but I think there's still a bunch of jockeying around for an alderman says, what say do I have in this? And I don't want to set off onto this tangent of aldermanic prerogative, but that's what it gets into.
Yes.
But shall we move on?
Yes, sir.
At the May 20th City Council meeting, there was kind of a big deal approval that went on. The City Council approved a zoning change for a $700 million hotel and residential high-rise development next to Tribune Tower. Ben, I'm sure you're aware, and many of your listeners are aware, that the Chicago Tribune newspaper moved out of there a while back, and it's undergoing private development. In the controversy, one controversy that erupted at the council meeting, it was around minority contracting. So first of all, this is a completely privately funded development. There isn't any public subsidy. When there is public subsidy, the city has rules that there must be a certain minimum level of minority businesses and women-owned businesses that are brought in. There are actually statutory minimums. But because this is a private development, it doesn't trigger those contractor minimums.
Okay.
But what we're going to hear in a minute is the alderman of the 42nd Ward, Brendan Riley, in whose ward this development resides, is very proud that even though these minimums for minority and women contractors are not required, the developer committed to them anyway, and his colleagues reacted to that. Let's listen.
I would like to read the written commitment into the record now. Tribune Tower East, Chicago owner LLC, agree that with respect to the Tribune Tower project, it is their commitment to achieving the goal to utilize 26% of qualified and certified minority business enterprises and 6% of women-owned business enterprises on this project. Further, the applicant will not seek waivers from goals if they are qualified, certified MBE contractors or qualified and certified WBE contractors.
Chair recognizes Alderman Sixto Lopez.
My concern obviously is on the follow-up of many projects and how local hiring has historically and systematically excluded people of color. Our communities in the South and the West Side are starving, are suffering. And I do hope that this is not another pledge that is not followed, but a commitment to make sure our communities actually receive the jobs that we badly need during these times.
The chair recognizes Alderman Maldonado.
I am equally concerned about the commitment of these developers that they say one thing, and then once they implement and start working on those projects, they forget about the initial commitments that they made to us, people of color, and of the city council. Contrary to what Alderman Riley expressed, I have not received any call. I have not had any conversation with any one of those developers as the chair of the Latino caucus. So if this is one example in the way that they are going to be communicating and executing their commitment to us, I already have my first red flag.
The chair recognizes Alderman Lopez.
I rise in support of this project. I do want to caution my colleagues who are standing up today worrying about communities that they did not bring up yesterday in zoning. If I remember correctly, I think I was the only one who brought up ensuring that all minority communities were allowed to participate. There's always been ample opportunity to speak up and ensure that our communities have a seat at the table. It's whether or not we decide to pull the chair out and join people that is usually the problem. I believe that not only this project, but as we did the project earlier today for Emmett, and as we continue to do projects where the city is putting money forward, the same conversation we're having today about a 100% privately funded venture should be applied to the conversations that we have on ventures where we are putting taxpayer dollars forward, ensuring that those are also incorporating residents from every community. We didn't have that discussion earlier today. We had zero discussion on that matter when it came to the $24 million bond issue for affordable housing a few hours ago. But now we're going to have a multi-level conversation about a $700 million, 100% privately funded venture in the city. At best, that's hypocritical. At worst, that is a complete missed opportunity by everyone who's worrying about communities that need resources, jobs, and contracts.
There's a couple things to tease out of this. One is that something that's sort of a loophole in terms of minority contracting, even if a developer uses contractors that the city has certified as owned by minorities or women, there's really no guarantee that they're going to hire from the neighborhoods that are disadvantaged, where the minorities or the women need jobs. Those contractors could be hiring from anywhere.
Okay.
Then another wrinkle is that in this particular development, in this Tribune Tower development, although the developer committed to, as Alderman Riley says, these certain percentages of minority and women enterprises, there really is no penalty if they don't do it, you know, if they don't comply. It's not as if the council is going to rescind the zoning that they passed or, you know, pull the building permits. So those are sorts of things that Alderman Byron Sixto Lopez of the 25th Ward and Alderman Maldonado of the 26th Ward were skeptical about. We heard Alderman Maldonado say that, you know, there's a red flag for him because he hasn't even heard from these people, and he's the chair of the Latino Caucus. And then lastly, Alderman Lopez pointed out that on this development, he was listening to his fellow aldermen complaining about hiring from disadvantaged communities. But just before this particular measure, there was an approval of a city-backed affordable housing development called Emmett Street, which is in Logan Square, which they approved, which does have city-backed funding. And Lopez says, well, you didn't raise a fuss about, you know, the minorities there.
Let me jump into the first part before I get to Raylo. Suddenly more pure than the other aldermen, which is always funny to hear the aldermen. Anybody in the city council saying, I'm more pure than you. I'm less of a hypocrite than you are. I always enjoy that part. Listening to this debate and then listening to your analysis, Dave, really points out how divorced a huge development like this is from the rest of Chicago. Here we are in the middle of a pandemic. Unemployment is rising. It's desperate times for a lot of people. A lot of businesses that are closed, a lot of people laid off. There's still uncertainty, so much uncertainty as to when people will get their old jobs back, if they get their old jobs back at all. And the poorer you are, the more exposed you are to the realities of how serious this crisis is. And then we go to Tribune Tower Project, which is just rolling along merrily, apparently. Utterly, unrelated, unaffected by this huge pandemic that has thrown so much of the city into a crisis mode.
Construction's an essential business.
I'm not saying it shouldn't be built. My point is that whatever money is backing this is not in any way worried of the impact of the pandemic, or else they'd pull their money. Everybody keeps saying it's privately funded. That means people have kicked in money. You invest money into this project because you think you're going to make money from this project. So it's in the high-end neighborhood in Chicago, a high-rent area.
It's on Michigan Avenue.
On Michigan Avenue. It's like the pandemic doesn't exist on Michigan Avenue. I'm not saying don't build it. I'm not saying that at all. I'm happy that some people are going to get jobs, and I presume they're going to be good union jobs, et cetera, and so forth. That's not my point. My point is that that corner of Chicago bears almost no relationship to the neighborhoods that Maldonado and Sixto Lopez and Ray Lopez are talking about.
Which is exactly, I think, what they were saying. I think Alderman Sixto Lopez says that, you know, our people are suffering, and the fact that we have commitments from this developer doesn't necessarily translate into it actually happening. And there's another thing that I rarely hear talked about. We saw this last year with the Lincoln Yards development along the north branch of the Chicago River and with the 78 on the south branch of the Chicago River, where those developers also made huge commitments to minority and women-owned businesses. But the thing I don't hear about is, are there actually even enough Black, Brown, and women Chicago tradespeople in the city to fill all these trade jobs? And if so, where are they now? I mean, where are they working now? They're not just going to suddenly materialize.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a woman that I know who is a trade carpenter. She told me that she actually had to stop doing projects like this. She's, you know, she's a skilled carpenter. She's a union carpenter. She would go to jobs and all these men, usually mostly white men, would relegate her to like cleaning up after stuff was being done. They actually wouldn't let her do carpentry. And she said this happened repeatedly. So she finally just had to like stop taking those jobs and start doing homeowner jobs. So these are questions that come to my mind, and obviously they come to the minds of these other aldermen.
It's obviously in the city's best interest to improve its training program and then to improve its outreach program. So you train people in poor neighborhoods, Ray Lopez's ward, to be skilled carpenters, let's say, and then you hook them up with these jobs. And there is some leverage that just think about this. The fact that the city council has to approve the zoning for this building shows there's leverage. So the notion that because it's not subsidized directly with property tax dollars like Lincoln Yards is being underwritten by our property tax dollars through the TIF program, there still is leverage that the city has. And I know I remember reading the paper, they're bragging about how much money they're going to contribute to the neighborhood fund, which will still just be a thimbleful compared to the amount of money that'll go to Lincoln Yards, public money. But there is leverage. So to pretend that there's no leverage is to act as though the city has less power than it does. The reality, Dave, is like a huge project like this is supported by so many people in the city of Chicago that they're not going to stop it or delay it to take care of somebody in Ray Lopez's ward or Byron Sixel Lopez's ward or Anthony Beal's ward or David Moore's ward or any poor ward where there's a lot of unemployment. It's just reality. That's just the way it is in the city of Chicago. And that's why I'm saying development under Daley, development under Rahm, it was isolated from the areas where development was needed the most. And I don't believe there's a planning person in the city of Chicago who ever figured out a way to make it less isolated. I don't think there was a will to do that. And I don't think there was a creativity to do that. And when I hear this debate, it's an echo of everything I've been hearing since the 90s.
Well, under the Lightfoot administration, there is an effort. We're not going to, I don't think, talk about this now, but I should mention that there is an effort to move development, and it's a very high-profile effort, at least it was before the pandemic hit, to focus development in the disadvantaged neighborhoods on the south and west sides. But let's leave that conversation for another day and move on to the next thing that I thought was of interest at the city council meeting.
Okay.
At this May 20th city council meeting, Ben, there were a series of moments that showed, at least to me, how video conferencing has changed the sort of routine of the city council. This particular episode was interesting to me because it exposes a way that the council has worked in the past that I think is somewhat dysfunctional, but not a lot of people know about. And this particular episode starts right after Alderman Riley gave his initial pitch for this Tribune Tower development we've been talking about. And the first person to ask a question about it was Alderman Daniel Espada of the First Ward. And he asked about affordable housing, which set up a sort of procedural exchange. Let's listen.
The chair recognizes Alderman Espada.
Thank you, Chair. Alderman Riley, definitely a beautiful building. I think it's an admirable addition to our skyline. You were talking about the contribution that they made to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. And while we know we need to keep the trust fund moving forward, do you have a sense of why they chose not to do units on site?
If I may, Alderman, when you have questions of this sort, you should be asking them through the chair. So Alderman Tunney, I believe that Alderman Espada intended to ask a question of you.
Madam President, point of order.
Who's speaking, please?
Alderman Hopkins on a point of order.
Yes, Alderman.
I didn't want to interrupt the proceedings or the debate, but I do just want to state as a matter of record that we do have a council protocol which prohibits the city council from turning into a question and answer session as a committee hearing would. And we seem to push that just a little bit during the previous debate. I just want to point out that that is a slippery slope. And I would hope we would all be cognizant of that going forward, that the time for question and answers is the zoning committee in this case. And that we would all be cognizant that council is reserved for statements and roll call votes.
Before we adjourn, I do want to note one thing. As you know, in the virtual environment in which we are operating, we are endeavoring not to have committee meetings overlapping. So if there are matters of interest, the agendas for the committees posted well in advance, even if you're not on the committee, please avail yourself of the opportunity to participate, at least by Zoom, so that when it comes time to vote on a matter that you are not a part of a committee on, you'll be fully advised in the particulars to allow you to vote one way or the other.
Then you might say, shut up and vote, right?
What a city. I love my city, man. I could have lived anywhere, Dave. 1980, I could have lived anywhere. I chose to come here. Shut up, too much democracy.
This is not the time to ask questions.
Okay.
Just a little bit of background that, you know, Alderman LaSpada, as we mentioned, I think earlier, this is his first term. He's a so-called freshman alderman. He's never held public office. His sort of chastiser, Alderman Brian Hopkins of the Second Ward, is in his second term, but he is a longtime government employee. Before he was an alderman, he was the chief of staff for Cook County Board Commissioner John Daly, the brother of the longtime mayor, the son of the longtime mayor as well. And it's interesting to listen to Mayor Lightfoot tacitly agree with Hopkins' premise, which is that the council meeting is not the time for questions and answers. It's a slippery slope if we go there.
I know. We might get more answers. A slippery slope. Well, we might have an enlightened citizenry. Don't want that. Just shut up and vote. All right, LaSpada? Good God. Did Raylo just... come on. Please tell me Raylo got up. Raymond Lopez. He's like the new voice of reason in the Chicago. Did he get up and say anything at this point?
No. There were a number of aldermen who asked questions once the LaSpada opened the floodgates.
Oh.
But Lightfoot's remark was there at the end. She made the remark at the end of the city council meeting saying, listen, y'all, if you want to, you can go to the committee meetings, which are the forums for questions, which leads into an interesting detail. Those of us who have covered city council at all know that pre-pandemic, the committee meetings like finance or housing or budget or economic development, they are scheduled in the weeks in between city council meetings, which have generally been monthly. And quite often in the past, the committees schedule their meetings, their hearings simultaneously. So there'll be a 10 o'clock meeting of the budget committee on a Thursday, and then at 11, there'll be an economic development or a public safety meeting. So if an alderman actually sits on both of those committees, they've got to decide, which one of these am I going to go to? Same thing with reporters. So one of the things that Lightfoot said, she said, we are now making an effort. We, even though she's not part of the legislature, said we are now making an effort not to have simultaneous city council committee meetings. So presumably the chairs decided when to have the meetings at their own convenience. And it could be argued that that doesn't serve the public interest because not only can't aldermen go to meetings happening at the same time, but neither could the public. But now someone has decided that they shouldn't do it. It really invites the question, how and why did that come about?
I would say as a general statement, how do I want to put this? Transparent. Isn't that the word they use? Isn't that their favorite word? We're going to be more transparent. More transparency is always encouraged. So the notion that somehow or other, the rookie alderman from the first ward, LaSpada, violated some sacred city council rule, regulation, or protocol that had the veteran, Brian Hopkins, just move to the point where he had to say point of order, you know? And then also a rookie, by the way, the rookie mayor, Lori Lightfoot, suddenly a student of Robert Rules of Order, pointing out, yeah, you're right, you know? This is not the place where you get to ask your questions. What if the public missed the committee hearing? Now, I realize that the number of people who actually pay attention to what the Chicago City Council does is very low. So watching these virtual meetings, it's probably Dave Glowatz, Ken Davis, and Mick Dumke. Even Mick, I don't think, watches them anymore. So it's Dave Glowatz and Ken Davis are the only two people in the city of Chicago still watching this.
And Fran Spielman and John Byrne.
Okay, excuse me. The obvious. People paid literally to watch them at that moment. At least we have to pretend as though the public is watching. You know what I mean? Let's just pretend, Brian Hopkins. Can you just play along with us a little bit? Pretend the public's watching. And so that maybe the public missed the budget hearing. So they didn't hear the question, a very good, legitimate question asked. They didn't hear the response. Just play along with us. This is so classic Chicago alderman. They do this all the time. And Hopkins is only in his second term, but yeah, you're right. He learned from Daley. He served under one of the baby Daleys.
He's been around the block.
He's been around the block. And this is what they always do. The master of this was Patrick O'Connor. So you'd have some citizen come in and complain about, I don't know, the TIF program. And O'Connor would be like, take his glasses off. Oh my God, your ignorance about this program is so astounding. What you don't know is that the law, Section 452 or the municipal code, blah, 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 and the poor citizen would be so confused. I remember when the Chicago Teachers Union, when Karen Lewis's group took over, they had their first TIF meetings. The alderman basically said, you can't believe anything that guy tells you. It's so easy for an alderman to bamboozle the public because it's so easy for the aldermen themselves to be bamboozled. And they've just fed each other these misconceptions, distortions, and lies for so long, they just want the rest of us to fall in line.
Well, you know, Ben, the pandemic is changing everything. This has become a rather cliche perspective now, but it's true. I'll be interested to see now that the city council is evidently no longer scheduling committee meetings to occur simultaneously, whether once they start meeting in person, that practice will continue. And I think if it doesn't, if they continue to schedule them so they don't overlap, that'll be a positive development that comes out of this troubling time.
I have one last question. We talked so much about this, but I forgot. What was the question that LaSpada asked?
He was asking about affordable housing in this development. We didn't get to hear Riley's answer, but Riley's answer was that because there is a zoning change, there are requirements for affordable housing. But as you alluded to a little while ago, Ben, the developer has the option of instead of putting affordable housing on site that they pay into an affordable housing fund, they essentially get to pay not to have to put units on site.
And I would say that's a teachable moment for the citizens of the city of Chicago. And I would say that Brian Hopkins and Lori Lightfoot were joining together to prevent the people of the city of Chicago to having a little better understanding of how their government works. To say that, oh, well, that the only place to ask that question is in a zoning committee meeting that probably no one will watch, because they think most of the action will be at the city council meeting, is to really miss an opportunity to understand that perhaps one of the reasons we have a shortage of affordable housing in the city of Chicago is, as I said before, there is no direct connection between development in booming areas, gentrifying areas, and the lack of development throughout the rest of the city.
I think you make a really important point here, Ben, is that given that there are so many people perhaps now that are watching city council meetings than ever before, because you know they're being live streamed and people are at home, that this is actually a very good time, an opportune time for the city council to encourage this kind of questioning rather than to try to shut it down.
To discourage it. By the way, I think what we should do, I don't know if you ever saw a movie called Best in Show. You ever seen Best in Show?
I'm afraid not.
Oh my God, great movie. But in Best in Show, it's all about dog lovers and they have this dog show and Fred Willard plays a TV commentator who's doing commentary as the dog show is going along. So you and I should do literal commentary on this stuff as it's happening. Well, Ben, what's going on?
I love that idea.
What a great idea. And that's what you
said. Play-by-play.
The play-by-play. Uh-uh. Too much knowledge is a dangerous thing, okay? Chicagoans, just continue to be ignorant. Man. It's worked so well for you as a tax-paying pop.
Oh, Ben, we got to do this. We got to try it at least one time. So it's going to be so much fun. All right, well, Ben, let's move on, shall we?
Okay.
What we're going to talk about next is something that happened about, three quarters of the way through the city council meeting. And this is when Mayor Lightfoot used the occasion of the one-year anniversary of her inauguration that we talked about earlier to give about a nine-minute speech that she'd clearly prepared in advance. But it took me by surprise because, well, first of all, it wasn't on the agenda. And secondly, it addressed the mayor's relationship with city council members. And Ben, I'm going to ask you to help me set this up. How would you characterize, here's another softball, how would you characterize the mayor's relationship with city council members?
Tenuous. It's different.
He's holding back, folks.
Yeah, it's different than previous mayors. the obvious contrast, Rahm Emanuel, when he took over as mayor of the city of Chicago, went to the leaders of the city council, Ed Burke and Patrick O'Connor, and said, I am not in any way going to challenge your leadership in this body. You're going to continue to do whatever you do. I'm going to look the other way. In the case of Ed Burke, had a flourishing property tax business where he was essentially putting the squeeze on people who were also coming to the city looking for TIF handouts, etc. And so Rahm looked the other way. And as a result, city council operated the way it had been operating for years. Daley did the same thing. He looked the other way. So Mayor Lori Lightfoot, she ran as a quote-unquote reformer. And as such, she was the beneficiary of the Ed Burke scandal, the Ed Burke indictment, the feds going after Ed Burke. So she ran against Ed Burke. The citizenry of Chicago woke up long enough to decide that Ed Burke was a bad guy and they didn't want anything else to do with him. So as a result, she has effectively put Ed Burke's head on the neck of every alderman in the Chicago City Council.
What an image.
I know. And so it's an easy thing to do because most people in the city don't really pay attention. Like, they just have this general notion that aldermen are no good. They may love their particular alderman, but in general, they're no good. So they like nod along. Oh, Lori, you're right. Oh, get rid of alderman and prerogative. They don't even know what it is. Sure, I'll get rid of it. You know.
So you're saying that Lightfoot feeds that fire?
Yes, she does. Very successfully, very brilliantly. She has a great public relations operation. They've done a great job. I have to give them credit. I disagree with the notion that alderman and prerogative is a problem in the city of Chicago. I think you know my position on this, but I have to tip my hat to Lori Lightfoot and her advisors because the public is with them on this one. They're not with me on this one. All she has to do is say alderman of prerogative, and half of Chicago just dutifully nods its head.
So that's why what we're about to listen to is so interesting in terms of public relations. It's not what I would have expected from her. Like I said, it was a somewhat lengthy speech, and I've edited it way down, but it does take a few minutes. But let's listen to it.
Before we move on to further business, I want to take a moment. May 20th will always have particular significance for many of us. For some, myself included, we swore an oath for the first time that bestowed upon us both a great honor and important obligations. So whether veteran or new to elected office, we've been on a journey together that began 1 year ago today, and now 1 year later finds us in the middle of a challenge of a lifetime. All of us were brought together by our city's voters. That mandate was and is our mission, representing a new day for our city. One which saw us taking a new direction towards a horizon as more transparent, inclusive, fair, and prosperous for all communities, not just for the fortunate few. And with due respect to the point of order, this is exactly the kind of debate and discussion that is important for us to have. I very much appreciate all of your hard work, your wise counsel, even when we disagree, and your daily commitment to meeting the needs of your residents and your service to this city that we all love. And I ask our new aldermen to share some of their personal highlights, and what they said was as varied and diverse as they all are. For Alderman Rodriguez, his highlight was helping craft and support the Fair Work Week and strengthening the Welcome City Ordinance. Alderman Haddon cited our work in securing and stabilizing our eroding lakefront and increasing support to keep our shoreline protected. Alderman Sicho Lopez looked to our efforts to stop predatory practices against homeowners, as well as creating a community advisory council to ensure input from ordinary residents on the 78 development. Alderman Gardner spoke about the compromise struck with developers at a senior living facility to bring more, specifically 11 affordable housing units to a site which previously had none. For Alderman Taylor, it was expanding transparency in her ward. Alderman Cardona, a very hardworking man, cited his work in supporting the residents of the Cicero and George apartments. And for Alderman Coleman, it was completing tens of thousands of service requests, supporting local businesses, and organizing, ready for it, the first ever Inglewood Town Hall with all five aldermen representing the community participating at once. Well done. The story of our year together has been one story of our shared, singular mission to create a city where everyone has a place and no one feels alone or left behind. And in this time, it is incumbent upon us to find common ground for the good of us all. Thank you, and God bless you.
Ben, you talked about public relations operation. I wonder what PR person came up with that idea, like Joanna Klonsky?
My good friend Joanna Klonsky, yeah. Let's give her the credit, because that was Lori Lightfoot at her best right there.
Yeah.
You could say, oh, well, what about this? What about that? You know what? That was her at her best. She was extending an olive branch, and when she extended the olive branch, she didn't use it to hit him over the head with it. And the funny part, she got to Jeanette Taylor. Jeanette Taylor has been not unafraid to be critical of the administration and some of its policies, and I love her dearly for that. But she found a way to say something nice about Jeanette Taylor.
Well, I'm imagining Lightfoot's staff contacting each of the freshman aldermen, and what the mayor was reciting was just what the aldermen gave them. So I'm tempted to read into the very short piece that Alderwoman Taylor presented. I mean, it was all of 7 words, I think. You know, the increase of transparency in her ward. Like I say, I'm tempted to read into the brevity and the subject matter. I don't know. Do you have any opinions on that?
Oh, that would be part of the commentary.
Exactly.
Man, really, if you notice, it's only 7 words. I thought it was Lori Lightfoot translating what Jeanette Taylor gave her.
Well, we don't know.
We don't know. But you know what? It was a nice gesture. She spoke well. I guess it was her way of saying, we may fight over this, that, the other thing, but basically, we all have the same objective to make the city better. That would summarize that statement. And then as soon as it's done, let's go back to fighting.
Well, on that note, we're going to listen to this last piece that perhaps goes in that direction. This is an example, I think, of a seemingly innocuous procedural move in the council meeting. And to hear it, you wouldn't maybe think much of it because it's really kind of minor just on the surface. But what's interesting to me is that what happened behind the scenes that led up to it. A certain part of each city council meeting is a time where the clerk, the city clerk, reads a list of the ordinances proposed by the administration, essentially what the mayor wants to introduce for future consideration. And after the clerk reads each one, the clerk identifies which city council committee the clerk's office has determined has jurisdiction. So this starts sort of the path of the legislation, which is generally a 3-step process. It's introduced, like we're going to hear, at a council meeting. Then it is taken up by the committee that has jurisdiction in a hearing. And then if it's approved, it goes to the city council, full city council, for approval. And we're going to listen to the clerk reading a couple of those, and let's listen.
Let's move to communications. Mr. Clerk?
A series of communications from Her Honor the Mayor to the Honorable the City Council of the City of Chicago. At the request of the Commissioner of Planning and Development, I transmitted with an ordinance authorizing an allocation of NOF funds to the Inner City Muslim Action Network. Your favorable consideration of this ordinance will be appreciated. Very truly yours, Lori E. Lightfoot, Mayor. Referred to the Committee on the Budget and Government Operations. At the request of the Commissioner of Housing, I transmitted with an ordinance authorizing with Alderman Burnett, Hairston, and Sawyer an ordinance regarding notice of intent to terminate tenancies and associated relocation assistance. Your favorable consideration of this ordinance will be appreciated. Lori E. Lightfoot, Mayor, referred to the Committee on Housing and Real Estate.
Rules.
2 committees called. The matter is referred to the Committee on Committees and Rules.
So here's what happened. The clerk read that first ordinance, announced what committee would consider it at its upcoming meeting. Then he moved on to the next ordinance, and normally it would go down the same way. But aldermen are listening carefully to what's in the ordinance, because if they want to slow something down, here's where they can do it. So on this one, there was an ordinance that was proposed by the mayor's administration that increases protections for tenants whose leases aren't being renewed. The clerk announced that this one is going to the housing committee, and then you heard a couple aldermen shouting rules, meaning that they didn't agree that it should go to the housing committee. It should go to the rules committee. They could have said any committee. They could have shouted finance or public safety, because whenever that happens, the city council's regulations are such that it automatically goes to the rules committee, which means that now it's got to go through an additional step. The rules committee then would have to vote to let it go out of its committee and then go to the appropriate committee, in this case, housing. In this case, and we know this because it was reported by a couple of media outlets, that there was a bunch of negotiation going on between the administration and some progressive aldermen to create an ordinance to give tenants who are being kicked out of their leases or leases are not being renewed some more leverage. In other words, increase a 30-day notification by the landlords to 90 days to give them some monetary compensation for not being able to stay in their apartments. And apparently these negotiations have been going on between these aldermen and the administration for some time. But the administration decided, you know what, we're kind of done with these negotiations now. I, the mayor, am going to introduce this ordinance because it's where I want it. And these progressive aldermen were not shy about talking to reporters about, whoa, she surprised us. She pulled this ordinance out after we weren't done negotiating. So when they learned that it was being introduced, they decided to see if they can just, you know, put a speed bump in there with the rules committee.
Who were those two aldermen that yelled out rules? Do you know?
We don't know.
Okay. We don't know. Set it to rules.
We could do an analysis of the voices and figure out. I think there was one female and one male, if I'm not mistaken.
These ordinances are still in rules?
This particular incident happened on May 20th, so the rules committee has not yet met.
Well, they could convene if they wanted to the next day.
That would be cool.
I mean, you really wanted to play the game hard.
Well, you know, the administration might do that, too.
I'll point out again, the chair of all these committees have that position by virtue of their alliance with the mayor, a bizarre little situation we have in Chicago. So if the mayor wanted to, she could call up the chair of the rules. I do not happen at the moment to know who that chair is.
Michelle Harris.
Michelle Harris, 8th Ward. Boom. Alderwoman Harris, could you please have a committee? And then 2 days later, I forget how much public notice you need. What is it, 48 hours?
Yeah, 48 hours.
Yeah, bada boom, bada bing. It's out of the committee. Listen, whoever yelled out rules, I remember when I read this in the paper, I had a smile. I think this is the first time that the independents have kicked a mayoral idea to rules. Usually, it's the mayor kicking an independent idea to rules. That's the burial ground.
These kids are learning the ropes.
They're learning the ropes. But again, Mayor Lori Lightfoot controls the committee structure, so they want to get it out of rules. It's not that much of a problem. In the old days, when they wanted to, let's say, bury an elected school board matter that some independent had proposed, Mayor Rahm kicks it to Rules Committee. There's not going to be a committee hearing to get it unkicked out, if you get what I'm saying. We'll close with this. We had earlier on the show, State Representative Delia Ramirez, who was talking about her efforts in Springfield to get the General Assembly to pass progressive-oriented protection for renters. Ultimately, they couldn't even get a vote on it. They didn't have enough votes, so it didn't come before the full House. What progressives are learning, and this is an age-old lesson, is that there are always going to be major stumbling blocks anytime you push hard for the rights of the people who have the least amount of power. And so when you're looking out to like protect renters, low-income renters in the city of Chicago, that puts a big premium on development and gentrification, Dave, you're not going to find a lot of allies. It's just a reality. So I think that that matter will eventually come out of rules. I'm not quite certain that the lefties in the city council will be happy with what gets passed. That's my prediction. What's your prediction?
I can't predict, but we do know that they did the best that they could, right? With the tools that are given to them, they at least learned to pick up the tool and use it. Like, oh, I've got this hammer here. I might as well pound on something.
Yeah. In the meantime, there's still a crisis for renters in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
Dave Gloads, thank you so much for doing such a great job sitting through those meetings dutifully, collecting those recordings. That's it for today's segment of the City Council.
That's all we've got for this episode. Listeners, as always, we welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions. You know you can always get those to us via email. Write to us at contact@shigov.com. That's CHIGOV.com. You can get to us on Twitter via @CHIGOVT and via Facebook at facebook.com/insidegov. That's inside GOV. I'm Dave Gloads. Thanks for listening.